Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Now, here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. For our radio audience tuning in Mississippi at WYAD 94.1 FM, we welcome you. But those joining us on the East Coast, those joining us in Atlanta at 106 Live, we're glad you could be with us, as well as those tuning in around the world, thanks to our friends at blogtalkradio.com. We're glad to have all of you as well. For our radio audience, we have another great hour coming up for you. We're going to kick it off with New York Times bestselling author Kamala Lawson Roby. That's going to be followed by Professor Angela Duckworth discussing her new book, Grit. I'm really excited to welcome Kamala back to our program, though, because as she and I were just talking about, this year marks the very first time in the many years since I've been conversing with her, either online or through this program, that we will actually be able to meet. And we're doing so around her newest book that everyone is already talking about. It's already on our 25 summer reads for this year. It's called A Sinful Calling. We're going to talk to Kamala not only about the new book, but also about this journey to seeing this book come to life with its many memorable characters. Kamala, hello to you, and welcome back to the program.
Hello, Cyrus. Thank you for having me.
Hey, the pleasure's definitely all mine. Kamala, you know, we were just talking about, this is book 13 in this Curtis Black saga that you've been able to write. I mean, what has it been like for you as you've gone from book to book to see the response?
Yeah, it's been amazing. And I think, you know, starting out in 2000, you know, at the beginning of the series, Casting the First Stone was my third book. And I don't think I ever imagined that, you know, kind of fast-forwarding to 2016, we'd be talking about the 13th title, because I probably have mentioned to you, and I know to some of my readers, but some still don't know that it was never my intention to even write a series, and it was only because of readers requesting more of the Reverend Curtis Black and that storyline and what was going on with the church and his family that I decided to continue it. So I am, you know, I guess, In a quick answer, still just as amazed as I was a few years ago.
Yeah. You know what, when I was prepping for your segment, and it's always great talking with you, and again, there's so many great layers, as I was saying to you, Kamala, in this book, A Sinful Calling. But the thing that I think, you know, because I'm not a big reality show person, but I look at the success of these reality shows out there, even the ones that are centered around people that are in the church. And I think what you have done, even before we had these shows, is really show us that these people are people, flaws and all, and they have many layers to us, as we all do. Do you think it's that connection that, you know, that this is, you know, the life of so many people that others are connecting with through these characters you've created?
I do think that. And, you know, what I had learned from readers very early on was that more often than not, they were continuing to read and looking for the next title in the series because they did know who, first of all, who the Reverend Curtis Black was, but as well as some of the members of the congregation or even the pastor's wife once he married his third wife, Charlotte. And so when people can relate, I think that really kind of, you know, encourages them to read just a little bit more about the story. I've had readers come out and tell me the names of their pastors who are just like the Reverend Curtis Black, or, you know, sadly, some of them tell me why they're never going to church anymore. And, of course, that's heartbreaking for me because, you know, you never want to hear that. At least for me as a Christian woman who loves God, you know, my first thing that I say to them is, you know, please don't feel that way and know that you can't place all of your faith in another human being standing in the pulpit who will make mistakes and do things and do wrong and fall short just as any of us will do, and that you have to focus on your own personal relationship with God as well as reading the Word yourself.
Yeah. You know, Kamala, one of the things we have not talked about on this program together, and I thought about it definitely when I was prepping for this segment, because you have been able to find such success among people who identify themselves as individuals of faith, as you just mentioned, but also individuals that just enjoy a good book. I mean, I think, though, that the interesting thing about you is that you have not in any way strayed away from, you know, let it be known, you know, where your strength comes from, you know, where your gifts come from. Did you ever have any question as to if that was going to be an issue? If people looking at this would say, oh, that's one of those Christian fiction books, or I don't read Christian fiction. Did you ever have any worry in your mind that that would overshadow the great story you were telling?
No, not when I was starting out. So it never even crossed my mind to consider that at all when I was writing Casting the First Stone. But then as I continued, and by the time I was ready to write, I believe it was, well, it was Sin No More, and I'm trying to think if that was maybe probably the seventh or eighth title in the series, that's when I had come to a point where, of course, there had been books where if a character had been really hurt or betrayed, you know, they may have allowed a four-letter word, you know, a word of profanity to come out of their mouth, or maybe they said or did something that was a little bit, you know, out of the ordinary for what you would call, say, faith-based or Christian fiction. But with Sin No More, I had to literally go into deep prayer to even continue writing, because I was getting up to write every day and then just not doing it and not feeling as though I wanted to do it, even though I had the words. I had already outlined the first half of the book. And so what I finally realized and really had to make the decision about was that, okay, you know what, not even one or two words. You know, I don't use a lot of profanity because I don't use profanity in that way, but not even one or two words are necessary. I can write an intimate scene and not give graphic details. And so from then on, I started doing that. And I think as I was writing Sin No More, in the back of my mind, there was a little bit of a worry of how much of my audience will I lose, you know, by doing that. And to, I think, all of our surprise, you know, probably anybody who knew me at that time when I was sharing my feelings about it, that went on to probably have the largest printing of all the hardcover books that I had had at that point.
Wow. An amazing thing. And, of course, you're not just known for the Curtis Black series. You also are known for your great standalone titles as well. Is that part of the escape for you as well, or even the fun of being a storyteller, Kimberly, that you're not tied into just writing about this family? Even though they are exciting and they definitely have, you know, their layers to them that different people can enjoy, that you're able to create these other characters and introduce those to your readers?
Yes, it is. It's definitely an escape for me. Sometimes I say, well, you know what, I write because I love to write, and I certainly love to write these kinds of stories about real-life issues, but just writing them in a fictional format. But I think for the most part, you know, there are times when I know I'm literally writing my Curtis Black titles for my readers, and I'm writing the novellas for myself and my readers. And so it does give me a little bit of an escape. And sometimes when I'm wanting to write about certain issues that to me just don't necessarily tie in with the characters and the personalities of those people who are in the Reverend Curtis Black series. And, you know, so of course, you know, Best Friends Forever, and now my book coming out next year, Copycat, just totally different types of characters that just never would have, you know, obviously had anything to do with one of the family members.
Right. Well, for those who have not pre-ordered The Sinful Calling, we definitely invite you all to do that. The actual release date is coming up on June 21st. We're going to talk about some of the layers of this story here in a bit. But for those who are just tuning in, either on the Radio Dial or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. We're really excited to welcome back to our program today New York Times bestselling author Kimberly Lawson-Roby. We're talking with her not only about her amazing literary journey, that much of it you all have gotten to know through the Curtis Black series, but also just her love of writing. And you've been able to share that love, Kimberly, with your readers. You know, I'm used to calling them fans. I know some authors prefer to call them friends or extended family. I mean, you know, has that even made the journey even more worthwhile for you, knowing that you have people literally around this world that you probably will never meet, but thanks to social media are able to connect with and hear their thoughts from book to book to book?
It has made all the difference for me, and it's kind of interesting to hear you say, you know, sometimes authors don't want to hear the word fan page. I don't, because even with my public figure page, as that's what Facebook calls it, you know, I always say that's my page for my readers, and that's what I refer to it as. And it's because over the years since I started my career, I really have felt like I have built a relationship one reader at a time, one book club at a time, and they make this possible for me. You know, there would be no Kimberly Lawson-Roby writing novel after novel without my readers. I mean, if they weren't enjoying even what I was doing, if it, you know, started to be at a point of, okay, you know, we're not really feeling that anymore, I don't think that I would do this. I know lots of writers who will tell you that they would write and they would literally want to die if they couldn't write, even if nobody read it. That's just not who I am. And so, you know, my readers are the people who give me a certain type of smile, you know, and a motivation and the inspiration to go on and do just another book. So they have literally not only made my career, but they have, you know, kept it going, and they're the reason that I keep doing it.
Yeah. For those that are looking forward to meeting you, you, of course, will be touring again with this book. For our audience joining us at WYAD 94.1 FM, I'm excited that Kimberlyn will actually be making a stop in Jackson, Mississippi on Friday, June the 24th. What has that part of the experience been like? I mentioned the World Wide Web, which are, you know, some of our audience are even tuning in to listen to this conversation, Kimberlyn, and that's how you connect with a lot of them. But what is that face-to-face interaction like for you? Because you yourself are a fan of authors as well. What is it like for you to kind of meet those individuals who have spent so much time with your books?
It's probably the best part of what I do as a writer, because going out on the road and reading, as you said, readers that, you know, may never have had an opportunity to meet. And in this case, you know, when you're on tour, you're meeting people that you never would have met had you not written a book. Sometimes it may be readers that have communicated with me by email or on social media for years, and I'm finally meeting them for the first time, and they may say their name or I'll recognize their face, and I could literally go back and say, oh, my gosh, that's right. You just got married last year, or you know what? Oh, you just had a baby last year, or it may be somebody who told me that their mom was ill, and, you know, I was praying for them, and so it's just the best thing in the world. I mean, I really have to kind of cut it off, you know, because when I speak for a little bit and then take questions and answers, I could do that all night long. So I have to try to remember, and a lot of times the bookstore community relations and event people will have to say, it's like, okay, it's been an hour, you know, we kind of got to sign books here. So, but yes, I absolutely love it, and I'm so grateful, you know, that my readers even want to come out and meet me in the first place.
Right. To go back to A Sinful Calling, one of the things I mentioned to you before we went on here, and I am definitely, I think, a character-driven reader for myself, especially because of this program, Kimberlyn. I always try to think about what my audience will appreciate about a book or about whatever it is that my guest is talking about. In this book, you address some vices, again, that are, I think, universal for so many people, but especially, I think, individuals, we hear about this all the time, individuals in the public who are dealing with their own personal demons, whether it's alcoholism, depression, you know, and then, of course, there's the issue that's in the news literally today, mental illness. I mean, do you know going into these books as you are going, you know, from one book to the other, that there are certain things you want to be able to address or at least to confront with your characters, or is it something that evolves as the story evolves?
It evolves as the story evolves to some degree, but when you're talking about usually the main two issues, I usually try to have two with every single book. So, for example, with the idea of Alicia dealing with mental illness, I knew before I even started to really focus on the character of Alicia and her personality and what she's gone through in the past, I knew that that would be her main issue. With Dylan, I knew that it would be this idea of I'm going to have a much bigger church than my father, and I'm not going to care that I wasn't called by God to preach. In his mind, he called himself to preach. He sees it as a career, and he just wants to have the money, the power, the fame, and he's consumed, of course, the money, the power, and women. So I knew that those were the two issues, and then I built the characters and the storyline around them. And I do the same. When I'm getting ready to write my novella, I'll go through a very old notebook that I've had for years and just kind of go down the list, and one will just stand out. Usually I could look at 10 different issues and one will stand out that didn't stand out when I was trying to figure out what I was going to do for the next book or the last book. So,
yeah. You know, you mentioned Dylan. There was and I'll talk around this because, again, for those who are listening to us here, they have not read the book yet, so most of them. Mm-hmm. So the thing, though, that I thought about was interesting about Dylan is there's this whole thing about having something to prove. And I think, you know, there are so many times when you have a certain name, when you come from a certain place, or you have certain things heaped upon you. There are things, of course, that you feel as though you have to do.
Yes.
Was there a part of you that felt sorry for Dylan in his predicament, even though, as you said, you know, he called himself, but realizing why he did it?
Yes, and I do. You know, Dylan is a not-so-nice person, as you know. I mean, he's done a lot in the past, and then he still hasn't learned his lesson, and he's doing lots more, you know, in terms of terrible things to people, and he doesn't necessarily focus on who he might hurt in the process. He just knows he wants what he wants, and he wants to have everything that his father had and then some. But there is that part of me that feels sorry for him, because you can't help but feel sorry for anyone who was either denied or rejected or treated badly during their childhood. And he certainly has not had the model childhood where it, you know, it comes to his mom or to his dad.
Yeah. You know, there's that really, and I felt this myself, and I was curious as to what it was like for you writing this, Carmela, when Jacob was having the conversation with Pastor Black, and he was asking him about his family. He says, "You have one son, two daughters, and a grandson." And Black answered yes. And, mm-hmm. of course, you know, there was that moment that you wrote where Dylan waited for his dad to correct, and he didn't do it. I mean, that is a difficult thing. Unfortunately, it's something so many people know. But what was it like for you to put yourself in Dylan's position at that point?
No, just to, I think, really focus on, gosh, you know what, this really happens, unfortunately. There are children who are born out of wedlock, or, you know, it could be before maybe their parent was married, and in many cases it is the father. It may have happened while, you know, the father was married and maybe had an affair with a woman, and now this child was born. But either way, that does happen, where that father now has this wife and what he considers to be that perfect little family that everybody sees publicly and knows publicly, and he's denying the child, not realizing all the damage that is being done every time he denies or pretends that this particular child is not a part of the family.
Right. What a great thing for all of us, I think, to remember. You mentioned, and I even referenced, you know, the different situations. Mental illness, of course, being one of those things that is not addressed a lot, especially for people in the public. And I think there are some people who, because of the shame and everything, you know, what is your hope? Because one of the scriptures that you use in the book, and you're able to use these scriptures so subtly. One of the ones that you use is during a Bible study lesson conversation, Philippians 4:6. When you are sharing scriptures like that, what is your hope that the reader is able to take, even though they're reading a work of fiction? What do you hope that they take away about the truth of their own lives and what's possible in their own lives?
And that's it. I think, you know, when you're reading about a certain problem or obstacle or something that any of my characters are trying to overcome and you see a scripture, my hope and my prayer is that you will take that scripture and know that this is one that you should meditate on. This is one that can really help you and encourage you if you're going through exactly what that particular character is dealing with. And so I think that's why. And so that's a part of me. You know, that's what I turn to are scriptures for anything that I'm going through, whether it's an illness, whether it's losing a family member, whether it's, you know, struggling with just, you know, fatigue or, you know, trying to make a decision. There's a scripture for every single thing that any of us might have to deal with or endure.
Yeah. I think that is so true. What a great reminder again for all of us, for sure. Again, everyone, New York Times bestselling author Carmela Lawson-Roby is our guest for this segment. We're discussing, of course, her amazing literary journey that continues with the newest book coming out this month, A Sinful Calling. It's available for pre-order now. The actual release date is going to be June 21st. You can visit Carmela's website at kimroby.com to get the full listing of her tour that's going to be taking place for sure. You know, one of the things we mentioned earlier, your extended family, your readers, Carmela, we have to talk about those that you have been able to inspire, because, I mean, that, as I think, is another great thing about you that I've noticed, especially through Facebook. I mean, what has that part of the experience been like for you, to know that just by your doing what you love, by your sharing it the way that you do, that you're able to help other people to see what's possible for them?
That makes all the difference as well, because your hope is that anything that you do in this life, that it will help someone in some way or another. So when you're talking about a writing journey and, you know, going from trying to write your first book, writing it, but then being rejected by every literary agent and every publishing house that you submit it to, and then sort of being forced to self-publish, even if that wasn't your original choice, and then realizing, you know, on the other side that it was the best thing, you know, that you could have, you know, ever done for yourself. And so my hope is that, you know, readers can look at that and say, you know, I can do that too. Not necessarily writing if that's not what their passion is, if that's not what their purpose is, because we know God has a certain calling on every one of our lives. He's given each and every one of us a different type of gift, a different type of ability that another person doesn't have. But whatever that goal is, that dream, that purpose is, you know, my hope is that, you know, people won't give up, that they will continue. They will see their dream come to pass. They will do what it is God has placed them on this earth to accomplish.
Yeah. I think that is a really good message for all of us to be able to keep in mind, and remembering too that, you know, as we see in this book and in other books by you, Kimberly, that hurt people do hurt people, but it's really up to us to make the decision that we're going to be the better individuals, that we're going to be able to put our faith where it belongs and to be able to do the good things that we all have it in us to be able to do, for sure. And I think, again,
yes,
that's one of the beauty about books like this. It really, it's great to be able to entertain, but also I think to make us think a little bit. And again, I think that goes to the success of this series for sure. You know, I had a privilege. It's ironic we're having this conversation this week, Kimberly. I had a chance to meet one of my favorite authors, Jackie Collins, last year this week. First time meeting her, unfortunately, it was just months before she passed away. I asked her a question in that interview, though, that I have to ask you, because she was celebrating at that time the her latest book and her saga. I asked her, how did she know when it was time to say goodbye? Have you thought about that when it comes to the Curtis Black saga?
You know, not so much. I think maybe when I was at about 9, 8, 9, 10, you know, books, because you think, okay, you know, I'm getting at a point where I've done, you know, pretty much one just about every single year. And so, you know, 10 years, that's a decade, and maybe it's time to move on. But then the children grew up, and so, you know, it became, I think, more of a family saga than it is just a general series. I don't know. You know, now I guess at 13, I'm kind of looking toward at least 15 to 20, you know, but, you know, we'll see how it goes. I think my readers will still play a part in that. I think they'll have a lot to do with, you know, how I continue to move forward with it.
Wow. Well, what a great thing. You're right. These kids, they do grow up, don't they? And I think, you know, as much as they're growing up, they're marrying and bringing other people into the mix for sure. That, again, is what keeps it exciting. Kimberly, congratulations to you again. Another great book. I can't wait for the rest of the world to be able to read it again. A Sinful Calling is one of Conversation's 25 summer reads for this year. Make sure you all add it to your reading list. You can go over and pre-order it now through our friends at Amazon.com. But, again, the official release date is June 21st. And remember, Kimberly will be hitting the road once again, so you all can go to her website at www.kimroby.com to be able to see if she's coming to a place near you. I know you all definitely want to meet her, as I'm looking forward to meeting her here pretty soon. Kimberly, again, congratulations to you, and looking forward to our next conversation together.
Yes, thank you so much, Cyrus. I sincerely appreciate it and look forward to speaking to you again soon.
All right, definitely looking forward to that as well. And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. Our radio audience, you all stay where you are. There's more Conversations Live to come for you. For those joining us online, though, we're going to lose you. So if you came in late, you missed part of the conversation with Kimberly, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay right after we go off the air. The link is already available through our social media friends. So head over to Facebook.com/CyrusWeb or go over to Twitter.com/CyrusWeb. We've already tagged Kimberly on both of those places, so you can make sure that you're following her and staying connected with her online as well. But if you'll click on that link, you can listen to the show completely for free and share it with your friends from there. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. You all make it a great one.